This morning, if you have a Bible, New Testament in particular, turn to Luke, book of Luke, chapter 16. We're going to focus on a statement that is made in verse 4, but in the context of that, a parable that Jesus gives about making preparation, particularly in view of one's stewardship. Beginning in chapter 12 of the book of Luke, and then really going up through chapter 16, the end of chapter 16, is a whole section in the Gospel of Luke about making preparation in view of your material possessions or your stewardship. And of course, you know Luke 12, where the man asked Jesus to divide the inheritance between he and his brother. Of course, Jesus said, "Take heed, beware of covetousness. Man's life consists not in the abundance of the things which he possesses." That life is not about things. Life is about serving God and serving others. Well, when you come to this particular chapter, in chapter 15, what you have is a denotion of, let's reboot this technology here. What we have here is the three parables that have to do with the sheep, the coin, and then the young man who left to go to the far country and then come home. And of course, the elder brother didn't go to the far country, but he still was sort of in a far country because he didn't have the same attitude toward the brother as his father did, which is sort of the scribes and the Pharisees' problem towards sinners, because they didn't think they had that problem. And then when you come to the end of chapter 16, you have the account of the death of Lazarus the beggar, and of course the death of the rich man that was at Lazarus, was at his doorstep, and one went to Abraham's bosom, the beggar, and then of course the rich man went to torments, or Tartarus is the Greek word, meaning the place in Hades of the unrighteous versus paradise, the place in the Hadean realm where the righteous go. So it has to do with how you use what you have. Your resources, your life, the time, your work, your energy, because we all give account in the end of time for what we've done according to our works, Revelation 20, 11 to 15 says. So I use the expression in verse 4 where this man is sort of, as we say, called on the carpet. Not yet, because he's planning as far as doing something before he gets called on the carpet. The parable says in verse 1 that there was a certain rich man that had a steward. And this steward, it had been reported back to this rich man that he had wasted his goods, or the master's goods. And so when word comes to this steward that the master is going to call him on the carpet, so to speak, to give account of your stewardship, that you no longer be steward. Beginning of verse 3, and we'll start each point in our sermon today in verse 3, he develops, as it were, a positive effort by which ultimately not to be condemned by the rich man, the master, but actually be complimented down in verse 8. But he makes this statement in verse 4, "I am resolved what to do." That's the only time in the King James Version the word resolve is found in the Bible. Now, the word translated resolved here is a very common word. It literally means to know, or to come to know, or to be acquainted with, like in this case, knowing with oneself, what is it I need to do? How many of us, if we get into a situation and we first talk to ourselves, before we ask anybody else, you know, what do you think I ought to do, or what do you think needs to be done? It's sort of like, let's think this thing over. And the Bible's filled with passages on talking to yourself. By the way, the prodigal son, we call him in Luke 15. Says, when he came to himself, he said. Didn't say to anybody else, he said to himself. How many hired servants of my father have bread enough to spare, and I perish with hunger? So there's nothing wrong with introspective talking. The Bible, matter of fact, says we need to do a lot of that. Here's a situation that I'm in. Let's, as we say, mull it over. Let's talk this thing out and let's see where we move forward in view of this situation. Now, the reason I use the word, how are your resolutions, or this question, how are your resolutions going, is this is third Sunday in January. You know, you always get to the first day of January, and what do people talk about? New Year's resolutions. New Year's resolutions. And by the way, I don't know if anybody in this room made any, or any goals or any plans or whatever. Now, personally, last year, around January 1st, I chose to read my Bible through, all the way through, in a year, and to use a certain translation, not the one I preach out of all the time. King James Version is what I preach from. So I read the entire Bible, Genesis to Revelation, from the ESV, English Standard Version. It's a pretty popular version in our day, and sort of wanted to see how all the verses and how the words and they all come out. This year, my goal is to read the American Standard all the way through. And so far, I'm advancing pretty far. Now, I don't know what your goals are, what your anticipation and, you know, expectations are, but listen, if we don't have some goal in life, how do we know we're making progress or we're going backwards? You got to have something called a goal. Long-term goal, that's obvious to a Christian, right? Go to heaven. Long-term goal, go to heaven. All right, now what am I going to do in the meantime, in short term, in order to make those steps toward that? And I know salvation is not earned, it's not of works, lest any man should boast. But there is something man is to do, right? Work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, Philippians 2:12. So there is something man is to do. God doesn't save everybody, he only saves certain ones, and that's based upon covenant relationship and how man does according to his works. Not his intentions, according to his works will be judged. Well, in the 16th chapter, verse 4, I am resolved to do. Okay? Again, when you read down in verse 8, you will find that this man was in pretty much a condemnation situation. He is being accused of having wasted his stewardship. And he's going to be called on the carpet. He's going to be held accountable for that. And if he doesn't do anything, he's not just going to be condemned, he's kicked out of the stewardship. Now you translate that from an earthly parable to a spiritual connotation. That means you don't make it to heaven. That's the bottom line of this parable. Even though you may be serving God, you can not serve God in heaven because of how man doesn't operate here in this life. We are to be faithful. Didn't say sinless. Okay. Moreover, it is required of stewards that a man be found, I'm quoting a verse, by the way, faithful. That's 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 2. Okay? So what is a steward? What are we all, by the way, we're all stewards. What are we all to do? Well, when you come to verse 8, the outcome was totally different. Notice what the master said. The Lord commended. By the way, what does he still call this steward? Unjust steward. By the way, to a large degree, regardless of how many great things we may do for God, are we still unprofitable servants? Book of Luke teaches us that. Okay? So we're not earning anything with God. We are trying to serve God to the best of our ability to apply the grace of God that saves our soul. He's still, as it were, an unjust steward. Well, like the prodigal son when he came home. Was he still a son that messed up? Yes, he was. How about the elder brother? Was he still a son that messed up? Yeah, but they were still sons, right? Now, the father didn't mess up, but what about all the children? Got a lot of imperfections. So the Bible doesn't condemn a person just because he's got imperfections. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. The Bible stresses it's what you do with it. It's what you do with it. It's what you do with your understanding. What do you resolve to do? He commends. Watch the rest of that verse. Because he had done wisely. Commends him for doing wisely. Not what he should have done before he got called on the carpet. It's what he did from that point forward. Listen. We can all live in the past. You ever seen a person try to do that? They're eat up with regrets. They're eat up with trying to get rid of the old, you know, skeletons in the closet or what. We can all live in the past. Jesus said, I am come that you might have life and have it more abundantly. Well, how in the world do you have life and have it more abundantly and live in the past? You don't. You don't. Philippians chapter 3, Paul said, forgetting the things which are behind, reaching forth to the things which are before, I press toward the mark for the... Where is that mark? It was in front of him, wasn't behind him. I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. If this unjust steward in Luke 16 had just said, I'm dead in the water, There's not one thing I can do to fix this. There's not one thing I can do to straighten it out. Just let's get it over with. You know, just as we say, just wallow in self-pity and fatalism. It's just a fatal situation. I'm done. Life is not worth it. No, that's not what he did. So there are three things, and the idea is, what did he do? What would this parable do to help every one of us? Number one, look at verse 3. It started with a change from within him. You ever had anybody tell you what you need to be doing? They look at your situation on the outside looking in, and they turn around and they tell you what to do. By the way, how's that working for you? Sometimes in gospel meetings, I'll teach in the book of Job. Use that in a Bible study a lot of times. And I get over and talk about all of Job's miseries. And what could Job have done? He could have done what his wife told him to do, right? Curse God and die. And then Job's got three friends telling him what he needs to do. By the way, did Job do anything that his three friends told him to do? Not a thing. Not a thing. What do you want? I want to talk to God. I want information from God. God's the only one that can help me understand not just what's going on here, but how to move forward. Okay? So Job sort of introspectively in chapter 3 starts talking about why. He asks all the why questions. Why did I not die? Before I was born, immediately as I was born, you know, when I was on my mother's knees, why did you bring me into the world to live a life like this, to have a life like this? By the way, we call that depression, battling depression. You know, listen, righteous folk battle depression. By the way, there's a difference between having a bad day and depression. There's a difference in those two concepts. Everybody has a bad day, but not everybody battles depression. Job battled depression. Read chapter 1. That's enough to depress you, right? Read chapter 2. Okay, that's insult to injury there. Lord, what do I do? Why? By the way, is Job a righteous man? He's quoted in James 5 as a righteous man. You have heard of the patience of Job. Quoted in the New Testament now for New Testament Christians. So what did Job resolve to do? He's talking within himself. It's what the prodigal son did in Luke 15. As a matter of fact, that's probably the meaning of the word meditate in the Bible. Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord. In his law does he meditate day and night. For example, what does that mean, Psalm 1, 1 and 2, particularly verse 2? Well, here's the best way I know how to explain it. You run into a situation in life, and being honest with yourself, I don't know how to fix it. By the way, live long enough, you run into that. Won't take long, by the way. The older you get, seems like the more you run into. I don't know how to fix it. So what do? I pick up my Bible and I start reading. And I read 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 and I read. And all of a sudden, because I'm looking at the Bible from this situation standpoint, all of a sudden, verses start coming to light that I never saw before, because I wasn't ever reading my Bible to fix this, because, you see, this never came until now. And so all of a sudden, these verses, you start reading, and it's like, there's what I need to apply. So now you formulate a plan. But where did it all start? Started in here. Everybody can tell us what we need to do, and it could be dead wrong. Job had three friends, and they all thought they knew what was right, and it was all dead wrong. Read Job 42 and find out if it wasn't dead wrong. Next point. Come to verse 4. He had a concrete plan to execute what he had in mind. Look at verse 3. What shall I do? For my Lord takes away the stewardship. I cannot dig. To beg, I am ashamed. By the way, cannot dig probably means he didn't think he was physically capable to do that kind of work. By the way, that's what we call hardcore manual labor, isn't it? To go out here and to dig. Okay? To beg, I don't emotionally and mentally and psychologically think I can go out here and be a beggar on the side of the road. Well, if you go over to Luke 16, do you have a beggar at the rich man's doorstep? By the way, was there a righteous man who begged? Lazarus the beggar? But this man's like, I'm ashamed to beg. By the way, how many of you want to do begging for a profession? Just as a side note, do you think there are people in the world who go from church building to church building to church building to church building as professional beggars? If you think that's not true, just stick around this building about spring and fall of the year when we get these transients that move through. By the way, how about the stories that they tell? Let me tell you, they're pretty entertaining, to be honest with you. Pretty entertaining. There was a woman one time that came through from South Florida going to Texas. Texas now. And came here to North Alabama to the church building here, and I happened to be here, and the story just got longer. The longer she talked, the more larger the story became. And I said, you know, there's a quicker way to get from Florida to Texas than to come through North Alabama. There's a quicker way. You know, there's all kinds of places from Florida through the panhandle of Florida and Mobile, and, you know, you can get to Texas a lot quicker. About it, she didn't want to hear that. Okay? In other words, the longer I talk, the more you're going to be sympathetic, right? And you're going to give me what I'm asking for. Well, it's easy to get jaded. It's easy to become callous and just say, look, you know, if you'd sell one of those diamond rings you've got on your hand down here at the pawn store, you'll have more than enough than what you're asking us to do. Oh, I don't want to hear that. Okay? To beg, I am ashamed. I don't have any intention of going down that road. Some people just, they're big, they don't have any qualms about it. He developed a concrete plan. What am I resolved to do that when I am put out of the stewardship, that they may receive me into their houses? In other words, I'm about to lose this job. Let me now lean upon those who are as indebted to this rich man because they owe him money. You know, here's 100 measures of oil and here's 100 measures of wheat. They owe him money and they don't have the wherewithal to pay it. And now I'm in debt as a steward and I don't have any way to fix this, but I have a concrete plan. By the way, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, Romans 3:23. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. So what does the Bible, you put those two verses together, Matthew 6, Romans 3, put those two, what does sin put every person who's alive from Adam all the way up? It makes us debtors. It makes us what these people are. Okay, debtors to the rich man, debtors to the one that owns the universe, owns us lock, stock, and barrel. So what do? I'm going to try my best to help my fellow man who is as much in debt in a different way than I am so that they may befriend me, as it were, take me in, and so we can get through this thing together. Now, I don't know if this is a perfect parallel to what I'm about to say as far as this parable is concerned, but think about it. Doesn't the church need the church? We're all in the same boat. You owe oil, you owe wheat, you owe this man doing a good job and you didn't do it. But you owe, you owe, you owe. Listen, we all owe. And by the way, because of the cross of Christ, the price is paid. But if it come down to you and to me, none of us would ever get out of debt. Ever. By the way, for those of us that are financially in debt, we're like, as Tennessee Ernie further, we owe our soul to the company store. How does it feel being in debt? You ever thought about one of these days we're going to pay that off? You know, the house payment, the car payment, the whatever payment. And they're going to be debt free. By the way, spiritually, never going to happen. Never going to happen. On top of that, you'd be in debt to people out here that's helped you all during your life. In Romans chapter 1, Paul says, I am a debtor both to the Greek and to the Jew. Paul could look back right in Romans 1 and says, you know, there are a lot of people through my Christian life, there are a lot of people I owe things to. He's not talking about owing money, owing what they've done for him. Let me ask you a question. Barnabas. By the way, Barnabas was a Levite. That means he was a Jew. Actually, he's an Israelite, which would bring him all the way back to the Hebrew nation. Paul's of the tribe of Benjamin. Barnabas is of the tribe of Levi. Did Barnabas, the son of consolation, do anything for Saul of Tarsus to help him get his foot in a good relationship with the apostles in Jerusalem? Did Paul owe Barnabas something? You ever heard the expression, it's not what you know but who you know that helps you advance in life? Stop and think about that. Did you get your job not because of what you know or how skilled you are, but because of some connection you had with somebody? They put in a good word for you, or they may very well be the one that hired you. Well, I owe you. How much do you owe them? I owe you a lot. By the way, if they ever got in need, what would you do? Well, I've scratched your back now. You know, our debt's paid, and therefore I don't owe you. Is that the way Christianity works? I can look back on my own personal life, and you do it for you. How many people in the church, not just here at Bethel, but at Neil and everywhere I've ever lived, who actually have encouraged me to do what I'm doing right now? As a matter of fact, they've like, there may be some criticism coming your way. I want to let you know I appreciate what you're doing. I've actually had people write me notes, little cards or letters or whatever, and just send it to the mail and just say, I want you to know. And I'm thinking, well, I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting that at all. I know of some situations in some gospel meetings where a situation arose and all of a sudden this didn't happen. And an individual found out that didn't happen. He says, reached in his pocket and said, here, take this. And I'm like, it's not your problem. No, I know it's not my problem, but here, I want to help you. I want to try to fix this as best I can. You don't need to go home without this. And it's take money right out of their pocket and give it to me. So before you get on that airplane, you're going to need that down the road. Members of the church treat members of the church that way. Time, energy, food, notes, calls. Why? Because I'm in your shoes, you're in my shoes. We're all in the same boat together. He says, here's what I am resolved to do. First of all, he thought, now I will act. By the way, next point, did he act on what he thought to do? Listen, there's a totally different concept than planning something and doing what you plan. There's a daylight and dark difference between the two of that. I plan starting January the 1st to read my Bible through in a year. By the way, hopefully, Lord willing, if time goes on, you still got a year. Start today, read Genesis 1 beginning. Well, I planned, but the holidays were so busy, and weren't they? Even January the 2nd was a holiday this year on a Monday. And where am I? Oh, I got to catch up on my reading. Nobody's ever said that in this room, right? I got to catch up on my reading. I got to catch up on the amount of time I prayed to God. There are certain projects spiritually that I need to get started. You know, I made up my mind, I'm going to be more humble this year than I ever have been. Well, how's that going? Well, I can't tell you because then that wouldn't be humble. You know, oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way, the old expression goes. Or I want to be lowly, or I want to be whatever quality Jesus is. This is why I have made up my mind, I'm going to do a better job at this. Well, saying it and doing it. So it says in verse 5 beginning, all the way down to verse 7, it says, verse 5, so he called. He thought about it, and now he's going to plan it, and now he's going to execute it. And he consistently did what he planned. By the way, doesn't it feel wonderful to actually do what you plan to do? If you know anything about me, and my family knows this, I'm not telling them anything new, I've almost become obsessed with these people that are through hiking the Appalachian Trail. I mean, every year virtually, I follow somebody. By the way, there is a nut right now who started January 1, is out here in these Georgia mountains hiking this trail. I think it's crazy. Folks, it snows on top of the mountains when it's 70 degrees down here. And these people talk about what they plan, the amount of equipment they buy, and the logistics of everything, and the mail drops and everything. And I'm thinking, man, that's monumental. And you're talking about walking over 2,000 miles. And we're not talking about walking on flat ground on the beach either. We're talking about one of the toughest physical achievements some of these people would ever do in their lives. They got to make up their mind, right? And they got to plan that out. And then all of a sudden, the day comes to get on that approach trail or drive up to Springer and start actually doing it. Report is, most people who plan to go all the way to Maine go to Neal's Gap. That's 30 miles. Neal's Gap. Don't even get out of Georgia. And they quit at Neal's Gap, right at the foot of Blood Mountain. What happened? What happened? This isn't what I thought it'd be. Nowhere close. I did not know it would rain this much. I did not know it would be this cold. I didn't know you could stink this much. I didn't know you could get this hungry. I didn't know you'd have to put up with these kind of folks. I'm done with it. You ever know anybody do the Christian life that way? I didn't know it'd be this hard. Why not? Jesus said, straight is the gate and narrow is the way that leads to life. He told you it's going to be hard. Matthew 7, 14. He told you it's going to be hard. He said, you want to go to heaven? You got a hard road to go. Told you it was. Just put your brain to it. Put your nose to the grindstone. Go. Go. You're in the same boat with everybody else that wants to go to heaven. It's not easy for anybody. It's hard for all of us. So next thing, he calls this one, calls this one, calls this one, calls this one. The rich man finds out about it. He says, you're an unjust steward to me, but let me tell you something. You have acted wisely. The rest of verse 8 says, for the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. Now, what does he mean by that? The children of this world. In other words, here is a man who's not, we would say, a Christian, but he gets one thing. If you want something good in life, you do have to do something. The children of light over here think they've already got their ticket punched. By the way, this would be the scribes and the Pharisees he's referring to, these children of light. It's called irony or sarcasm here. What do they think? Depart in peace, be you warmed in field. That's what they would do. In other words, we're going to pray that God will take care of you. And by the way, do you have the resources by which to pitch in so that you can be the hands of God? Oh yeah, but somebody will do it. Or how about this one? Let somebody else do it. I've done enough of it. Okay? I've done enough serving God. Folks, will I ever do enough? I don't think about in terms of how much I've done. It's how much more can I do? Christians look for opportunities to serve. Don't relish in what we've done in the past. What more can I do? By the way, that's the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 5. If you love them that love you, what do you more than others? Even the publicans do that. In other words, go the second mile, sometimes even the third. So what do we find here? In verse 1, he wasted his goods. In verse 8, he wisely acted. So how's your resolutions today? Started out in trouble in verse 1. And now he walks in triumph in verse 8. By the way, is he still called an unjust steward? We're not going to give you a ribbon. We're not going to give you a... We're just going to say you act wiser than people who have a form of religion or a form of godliness and they deny the power thereof. That'd be 2 Timothy chapter 3, by the way. Oh, I've got religion. Look how I'm dressed. Look where I am. Look at what I've done so far within this hour. No. Understand the concept of needing to worship on the first day of the week. The point is, how is life as far as your plans are concerned? You may be here today and you need to be baptized into Christ. I would have no doubt that there'd be at least one person in this room has been thinking about that. Maybe that is your resolution. Before this year is over, I will obey the gospel. I remember in the year 1969, in December, a good friend of mine had been baptized into Christ at the Austinville Church of Christ building. He and I were almost inseparable. And I hadn't obeyed the gospel yet. And he sat beside me every service. And he looked at me and he said, "Jimmy, are you ever going to be baptized?" And I said, "Yeah, I plan on it." He said, "Why not right now?" And I told him, "Well, I've got a date picked out." By the way, it was January the 26th, 1970. Because my birthday was the next day, January 27th. 1970. I was 12 to be 13 the next day. So I've been thinking about it. It's not that I'd never thought about it. And he kept pressing me. "Why do you keep putting this off? Why do you?" "Because I got me a date over here. This is the Sunday I'm going to do it. This is, you know." And he kept saying, "Are you sure that date's ever going to come?" Well, what could I say? "Well, yeah, I believe it's going to come." No, knowing my Bible and knowing life, What can happen? Anything can happen. The worst case can happen, right? And I remember laying down every night in my bed before I went to sleep. Generally, my practice was to say a prayer before I actually fell off to sleep. I remember praying, "Lord, just get me to January 26th. Is that not the most foolish thing you've ever prayed in your life? Just get me to January 26th. And I remember, as well as I know my own name, waking up on January the 26th that morning and thinking, "This is what I will do today. Nobody really, except my buddy, nobody knows what I plan on really doing today." My dad got through preaching. I couldn't get my daddy to hurry up and quit quick enough. Okay? And as soon as the song leader started leading the song, I was sitting about where Joseph's sitting right here. And before my dad could get out of the pulpit and get down, I was already out of the aisle, and he and I met in the middle, shook my hand and said, and I remember sitting there thinking, "This is surreal." I remember thinking that. All of what I have planned in my mind and all of what I have waited for in this day, I'm on the front pew of the Austinville Church building, and I am about to get under the baptistry waters. I remember that. I remember standing and my dad taking my hand and asking me the question, "Jimmy, do you believe with all your heart that Jesus Christ is the Son of God?" I told him I do. I remember him walking me over here. By the way, he's crying his eyes out. He couldn't hardly talk because of the fact that here's his own last child at home, flesh and blood. I remember changing clothes and getting in the baptistry water, and I think my daddy put my backbone to the bottom of that baptistry, making sure I got well under there far enough. Because I thought he was going to drown me. He held me way down, it seemed like. Okay? And I remember coming up, and I remember, I did it. And you don't ever have to think about your past ever again. It's over. I remember that. Like I know my own name right now. I remember people bombing me with appreciation. Matter of fact, no one ever said, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. They all were thrilled when I did. And I remember immediately our Sunday school teacher and some other gentlemen in that congregation, there were a lot of us guys about the same age, all obeyed the gospel at the same time. Immediately they started trying to teach us how to lead singing. Immediately. Hey, you guys, you know, y'all want to have a song leading class? Hey, meet over here on Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We'll teach you for an hour before church or 4 o'clock, whatever. Next thing you know, yeah, we like singing. And I remember the first time I stood up to lead singing, both knees were knocking together. Scared to death. By the way, at 12 years old, your voice hadn't changed, so the first 5 notes out of your voice sounds like this big-time soprano opera singer. You want to be this bass down here. All of a sudden, it just cracked 3 or 4 times in the first 5 notes of the song. And by the way, the song I led is the song we're about to sing at Calvary. Ironic, isn't it? Listen, what you plan on doing, don't plan. Do it. Do it. There's no way for me to tell you how that feels. There's no way. I know by experience. This is in my mind. This is my plan. And this is what I consistently did. No regrets. You put your feet on a tough path. You keep on walking that path. 40 plus years for me now, maybe almost 50. I'm closer to heaven now, according to lifespan, than I was that day I was 12 to be 13 the next day. But I knew when I laid my head down on my pillow that night on January the 26th, 1970, and when I prayed, I remember saying, I now thank you as my Father. You are my God. You are my Creator. You are my Father. And I am your child. I will serve you whatever way you see fit. Still feel that way. So how is your resolution? Maybe you need to come back home. Be like the prodigal. Listen, you're among people who will kill the fatted calf for you. You say, I don't believe that. Well, let me put it this way. The angels in heaven will rejoice if you do. And God's people down here, we ought to, right? Restore such a one a spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. How's your resolution? If you're here today, let us assist you in any way possible. Won't you come then as we stand, as we sing.